People are concerned about how do you optimize a sabbatical? How do you take the best kind of sabbatical? It's really just about giving yourself the gift of that time to just be more fully human and experience the life that you're living and the tough moments and the great moments equally, as opposed to just kind of sleepwalking through life.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get a million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and I am so excited to share our guest today, who, in a word, is extraordinary. His name is DJ Dadana, and he is a senior lecturer of business administration at the Harvard Business School, where he teaches MBA courses on entrepreneurship and building meaningful professional and personal lives. He has spent his career translating social science research into real-world tools for positive change. In 2019, he founded the Sabbatical Project to define, explore, and research the role of sabbaticals in modern life. He's helped organizations all over the world, from nonprofits to Fortune 50 companies, design and implement sabbatical policies. His work has been featured prominently in The Atlantic, Harvard Business Review, Time, Fast Company, The Wall Street Journal, and New York Times, to name a few. There are so many more things I could tell you about DJ Dadana, but today we're going to talk about his newest book, Big Time Off, The Transformative Power of Sabbaticals and How to Take One, which is available everywhere where books are sold tomorrow. DJ, we got a lot to talk about. Welcome to the Daily Helping. It is fantastic to have you with us today.
Glad to be here.
I love to find out, and we're going to get into the book, and I'm so excited about it because it's a really unique topic. But let's jump into the DJ time machine. Take us back and talk to us about what put you on the path you're on today.
I went into sabbatical land the way that most people do, which is it happened to me. So about two-thirds of people, their sabbaticals are catalyzed by a negative event, personal health crisis, relationship crisis, job crisis. And so mine was half a job crisis, where I had started my dream company. We were doing good in the world. I was living and traveling all over emerging markets, which is what I wanted to be doing. And, you know, at some point, I just was losing energy to do it. I wasn't as happy. I wasn't as motivated. And that concept of burning out from your dream job, I found particularly distressing, because if your dream job doesn't satisfy you, what will? So it threw me into a little bit of an existential funk. But then the other side of the coin was more of a pull. And I had this pull towards doing things with my life, investigating parts of myself and parts of my identity that I just didn't find I had enough time to do with routine life. So given the space of vacations and the time outside of work that I had, I wasn't able to do a lot of those explorations. So it was a bit of a push from the world and a bit of a pull towards something that I wanted to explore. I then took a sabbatical. I spoke with my co-founders and we found a way to step away for 4 months. And you know, I went on a spiritual exploration. So I did a 6 week pilgrimage in Japan. And I also just did a lot of pretty mundane stuff. I took care of my mom. I remodeled my kitchen. So this blend of bucket list items and then just things that I felt like were normal human being tasks that were also important, but never urgent in the scale of day-to-day entrepreneurial leadership kind of thing. So that's kind of what kicked it off.
Well, there's a lot of things you said in there that were really good. So that, you know, most people go on sabbatical because they just need a break from life because something bad has happened, right? Be it relationship, professionally, or health, whatnot. But that wasn't necessarily the case for you. But then you combine these bucket list items. And I would say there's really three categories for you, because I don't know that the spiritual quest is necessarily a bucket list for everybody, but everybody should probably do something like that at some point in their life. So you worked out a 4-month sabbatical with your co-founders, which was probably rare for most organizations, right? Being able to leave for a quarter, more than a quarter, actually. So when that was over, at the end of those 4 months, and you got to help your mom and remodel a kitchen and go to Japan and do all of these things, where were you in your head, and what were the lessons from that?
Well, I spent a lot of my time on the pilgrimage in my head, as you can imagine. And I think what I was doing on that trip was really, first it was healing, right? Just really stepping away from routine life long enough to heal. You know, I think we talk a lot about burnout in our society, and people are like, what's the minimum amount of time I can rest before I feel better? And I found from our research and my interviews, you know, folks really describing it takes up to 2 months to really start to disengage from their identity and feel whole again. So that was step one. Step two was I was trying to examine, you know, who am I outside of this identity, this role that I've been playing for the prior 8 years? And, you know, who do I want to be? Have I evolved from my desires when I first started this thing? And the answer was yes, when I was doing that discernment around, just because you pursued your dream job and it felt, you know, great for a long period of time doesn't mean that that's you for the rest of your life. So this, how do you follow along as your identity changes and evolves naturally over the course of your life versus viewing it as like a destination you reach? So I was kind of sorting that out. I was mourning the loss of this part of my life, you know, leaving this mission that I cared about, folks that I really loved working with, and entering into a space of uncertainty. So this kind of liminal space between one identity, one job, and the next one, which, you know, uncertainty is uncomfortable. And so kind of trying to build up this confidence and courage to set forth without knowing the next thing, which is something we often see with sabbatical alumni as well.
When you finished this sabbatical, did you have this little light bulb over your head that said, I've got to put this into a book. This has to happen. Is that how it went down for you?
I think first I felt as though there needed to be research around it. So I felt as though I had a transformational experience where I was able to envision a wholly different life for myself. I felt, you know, more energetic and creative and self-authored. And obviously I had taken a vacation before, and so I knew it was something very different than a vacation. But, you know, my company was based on academic research. The nonprofit that I was on the board of was based on academic research. Even though I'm not an academic myself, I think I care a lot about the rigor behind that sort of kind of studying provides. And so there's plenty of blog posts around how taking a sabbatical is great. But I wanted to really understand what are the mechanisms behind this feeling that folks are having, and to help kind of normalize and legitimize the experience. And to see if it was it just my experience and the people that I had spoken to, or was this something that was occurring more broadly? So I wanted to create kind of rigorous research around sabbaticals for non-academics. And as you know, I mean, that took 3 years. I thought it would maybe take 6 months. And then over that process, all the people that I had spoken to, my own experience kind of deepening and becoming more clear over time, I felt like there was more to the story than just a research paper that would probably sit on the shelf somewhere. And so, you know, like many people, I had the hubris that at some point I wanted to write a book. And then like few people, I finally finished it. I think the closer you get to writing a book, the more intimidating and difficult it is, as you know. I think you just finished yours, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of evolved. I think as an entrepreneur, when you wake up every day and you are thinking about the same thing and you can't get that idea out of your mind for long enough, that's how you know that it's something you should pursue versus just like a fleeting idea. So I just woke up enough mornings in a row where I was like, "What? I'm not finished yet with this topic." And I'm glad that I was fully committed to it, because that was almost 10 years ago.
Amazing. So I want to talk about that research. You shared a little bit that for a sabbatical to kind of do its magic, it takes about 2 months. So I'm curious about the research around that. Why 2 months, and what are some of the other key points that your research uncovered as you were exploring sabbaticals?
I think that the 2 months and the duration of the sabbatical, I can't really pin down as like a blanket recommendation, because, you know, some people enter sabbatical land through major traumatic events, you know, the crises that I was speaking about, and others have a company policy, and it's just kind of a matter of course of their life. And so for those folks, it takes obviously a lot less time to detox and to kind of return to themselves. And that's the world that we're shooting for, which is extended leave every once in a while in your life and career is the norm, not some sort of pull the parachute type moment. And so, yeah, I think that just from the folks we've spoken to, 4 to 6 months feels like enough time to truly heal first, and then actually experiment with aspects of yourself, things you've always wanted to do, passions and curiosities and interests you had but no longer attend to, and just give that process enough time to unfold, right? You know, some people will say, I want to become fluent in a foreign language. Some people say they want to go on a long through hike. Those things take time. And there's something about the nature of the extended nature from being away from your routine job that allows you to shed that identity from your work and actually sink back into, who am I? Who was I? Who am I when I remove, you know, this mask of work? And who do I want to be in this next phase of my life, if this is an inflection point? So I think that the extended nature of the sabbatical is really important. You know, our definition is extended leave from your teen job, right? And so you have to be away from it for long enough. It can feel like work. You can do something that is work-like, right? Some people will say they want to write a book or they want to get yoga teacher certified, but it has to be something that's vastly different from the type of work you do on a day-to-day basis. You can't, you know, just do consulting for a couple of weeks in your old job. It's just not going to allow you to really get that distance from who you are. As far as other findings, listen, there's the health and kind of salutogenic findings around healing, you know, restoring burnout, you know, from physical ailments like ulcers and eczema and trigger fingers, to you know, just kind of mental unwellness. And so that's the first thing that people kind of talk about. The second thing is coming back with greater creativity, confidence in themselves professionally and personally, and, you know, perspective. So who am I? Who was I? I had a person describe it recently as like a near-death experience. And so like this concept of being able to kind of float above your identity and your current life in order to see, like, what have I done? How do I measure my life to date? And how do I want to re-enter that old life or steer my life in a different direction? And, you know, what all of these add up to is what they call in research peak life experiences. So things, you know, on par with the birth of your child, your wedding day, as far as informing the story of your life. So these things, which can be an intentional break that you choose and plan, can inform your life from then on and be a key memory across your entire life. If this was a pill, everyone would want it, right? But it's much more difficult.
Is there anything that you uncovered over these 6 months turned into 3 years that really surprised you, that you just weren't expecting to find as you dug into this research?
I think a couple things. You know, one, folks talk about, you know, do people have negative experiences on sabbatical, or are there people that wish they hadn't? I have heard, I feel like, the entire spectrum of experiences on sabbatical, from the most blissful, you know, easy, amazing experiences to folks spending their entire sabbatical taking care of, you know, a dying loved one, folks getting actually divorced on their sabbatical. And all of those folks, even if they had a profoundly negative thing happen during it, still would recommend a sabbatical and still want to take another sabbatical. And so, you know, people are concerned about, how do you optimize a sabbatical? How do you take the best kind of sabbatical? It's really just about giving yourself the gift of that time to just be more fully human and experience the life that you're living, and the tough moments and the great moments equally, as opposed to just kind of sleepwalking through life. You know, I mean, I remember hearing someone from the research talk about how they'd started a job and, you know, their mother passed away and they only took like 2 or 3 days off work. because they're like, I just got this amazing job. I don't want to lose it. That's just, to me, is not doing justice to these events that really make us human. So that notion of whether it's like a good sabbatical or a bad sabbatical, folks still feeling as though these experiences are some of the most important of their lives. I think the other one is this notion that, you know, most sabbaticals start from a profoundly negative event. I know that you have had a couple of those in your life where, you know, as did I, like when something bad happens to you, it pulls you up to say, okay, do I need to make changes in the life that I'm living? And, you know, maybe even, I can't believe I was working in that way for so long. In our research, we talk about it as functional workaholism, where we hear a lot about burnout. But I think what we see that's more prevalent is just this, the way of people working feels normal, and it's normalized over time. The people around you are working in that way. And it's not until you pull back from that for long enough that you realize that it was unhealthy and it was having physical manifestations, it was having mental consequences. So yeah, I think those are some pretty surprising outcomes that we've seen.
I think about this, and I talked about this in my TEDx talk. You know, I went from a 100-hour-a-week job that I hated to nothing. And I live in that space of nothing for months and months. And I was in my head a lot of that time, and probably as low as I had ever been, because that was the first major failure. But what came out of that essentially created the direction for the rest of my life. And I wouldn't trade that for anything. So you mentioned this earlier on. There's very clearly, other than the time parameters, a difference between a vacation and a sabbatical. But I'm wondering, from a practicality standpoint, because people have kids, people have responsibilities, you know, it makes sense to me intuitively for the empty nester or the single guy or gal listening to this, oh, I can do a sabbatical. That makes sense. For those of us that have this other universe of responsibilities we're tied into, how do we make sabbaticals work, DJ?
I'll talk a little bit about that, but I think the better question is, what does our life look like if we don't, right? And so thinking about the lens from, you know, you've got your grandchildren bouncing on your legs, or you're on your deathbed, like, what are the things that you would want to give to your family as experiences that you aren't going to unless you make a change in your life, right? So that's the lens that I would think about it, more from the perspective of what's on our bucket list to experience as a family who has a mortgage, who has kids, whatever the responsibilities are. And are we going to try to make this happen, or are we just going to live life and not do them, right? So I think that's the right lens, because no one's looking back on their deathbed saying, I wish I would have worked more, or, you know, my mortgage when I was age 44, it was like so big that I couldn't find a way to get out from under it. But there obviously are real logistical, financial responsibility constraints that I talk about in the book. And so I think the one lens that I would use to think about this is, almost no one can take a sabbatical tomorrow, right? Especially if they have children, if they have these kind of bigger responsibilities. So the right frame to use there is, you know, what are you doing in 5 years? What are you doing in 2031, right? What are you doing in 2033? And I think, or you look at your kids' kind of inflection points and say, you know, we'd like to live abroad 1 year, you know, maybe middle school works, or here's the age, right? So take some sort of longer frame time perspective and then work backwards from there. You can work towards taking 3 months off of work. Maybe it's just the summer, right? So you don't have to like take your kids out of school, but you can work towards easing the financial difficulties by saving up for 7 years. You can work towards logistical difficulties by kind of tracking to them with your and your spouse's job or your kid's school. So those are the two ways that I'd approach that problem. One, what would happen if we don't do this? What are the bucket list items or the experiences that you want to have that you don't get to do? And two, how can I think about it strategically with a longer time frame so it becomes more financially and logistically possible? Because my study and my book is littered with examples of teachers, nonprofit workers, folks that made this work because it was important to them. And they thought about it, maybe it took them 10 years to kind of save up, but it was the thing that they wanted to do. And just the second thing I'd say on that is we're working towards a world where sabbatical leaves are like paid parental leave. It's certainly not standard. The U.S. is still the only high-income country where it's not, you know, federally mandated and paid, but it's more frequent than not, and it's kind of, you know, known as kind of the standard. And so if a sabbatical is supported by companies, by policy, then this question doesn't have to happen. It's, you know, you're keeping your insurance, your pay, and, you know, moving your kids from one school to another school is inconvenient, but your mortgage, all that kind of stuff floats along. So working towards a world where it's normalized, but I think in the current world we live in, there's still ways to think about it.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. Now, you talked about how your sabbatical was a sabbatical of one. You went on the spiritual journey. You were in your head. You get to do all these things, sometimes mundane, sometimes not. So is there a blend? Because I know there's no answer to this, but did your research show that some people really thrived on a family sabbatical where it was the whole family for a year, or maybe they took part of that sabbatical, that was the family sabbatical, and they went off into the mountains for 6 weeks or, you know, something like that. So does the research that you discovered show that, you know, these family sabbaticals are exceptional? Should we still take a sabbatical for our just ourselves? Like, what did your research show there for that?
Yeah, in the book, I talk about kind of inflection points and reasons to take a sabbatical from gap year all the way to twilight career before you retire, right? And so what I'm proposing is more of a ritual of doing this every 7 to 10 years across your life. And in some of those, like gap year, you're going to have almost zero responsibilities. And in others, it's going to be very different. I think some of the most heartening stories from my research came from people that have kids, because your children are seeing you in a totally different light outside of who you are in this working context, which for many folks is the first time they actually get enough headspace to truly see their kids as people and not just a bundle of responsibilities. Time and time again, I've heard these stories with, you know, parents that just work so hard, they never get to, they miss these kind of moments in their kids' lives, and their kids only see them kind of stressed and focused on work. You know, I remember I was advising a CEO of a fairly large company this last summer, and it's got three kids. You know, they spent a month in Europe. They basically did it over summer break, so they didn't have to take the kids out of school or anything. And, you know, went on a weekend retreat with his wife, but mostly with the family, kind of touring around and in an RV and camping and things like that. And he only got to spend 4 days truly by himself. You know, his days during the summer were on his own, whereas he would have normally been at work. But he only spent 4 days by himself. And those 4 days he spent, and this is not going to sound very attractive to most listeners, doing a water-only fast in the woods in Vermont. Right. In those 4 days, his insights coming out of that were transformative for him on how he came back to his company, how he shows up for his family. And so I think you have different sabbaticals at different times of life, different sabbaticals at different financial means and things like that. But you're really just talking about carving out time for yourself as a human to do something that's important to you. A sabbatical isn't a thing, right? It's like a space for you to be who you want and do what you want for just a relatively small portion of your life, right? I mean, if you take 6 months off once in a 40-year career, which many people don't, that's, you know, 0.5%.
I'm sure the book describes the different kinds of sabbaticals you could take and how to structure those. So if somebody's listening to this, it's like, yep, I need the DJ Dadana Japan spiritual quest versus the other guy who's like, hey, you know, I want to remodel my kitchen, or, you know, tour every major league ballpark, whatever it is. I suspect your book kind of has some basic guidelines as to how these sabbaticals should be structured so one could maximize the experience. So I would love for you to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, I'd encourage, I'll take a moment just for your listeners, like erase what you've heard about my sabbatical, right? And like kind of close your eyes and think, what would you want to do with your life? Like looking back from a eulogy perspective, right? So if it is touring ballparks, if it is, you know, spending the summer going on some camping trips with your kids. And so once you've kind of got those things, the three archetypes that we saw people taking their sabbaticals were the achiever, the explorer, and the seeker. So typically people's sabbaticals fit into these three buckets. Most times it's a blend of them. And the achiever just wants to get something done. So they have always wanted to write a book. They wanted to do that, you know, big project in their backyard. And the benefit of this is that the research on rest and recovery before this kind of centered around, hey, if you want to rest, you have to be doing nothing. You know, like you need to be gathering your energy, recovering, sleeping. And there's an emerging line of research around if you're doing something, but it's not related to your current job. So it's like important to you, it's self-directed, it's intrinsically motivated. That's actually restorative. So even if you're like, I'm a type A person, I'm exchanging my work for something that might feel like work for someone else, you can still gain a lot of resources from that. The only warning is don't skip that healing step. So a lot of people, you're so excited to finally get a few months where you can just do anything that you have this list a mile long around, you know, become fluent, like learn to play the guitar, that kind of thing. Don't stop. Don't collect $200 before you actually heal and recover. The explorer is someone that has no kind of agenda except joy and experience, right? So classic kind of gap year backpacker, like what is out there in the world? Maybe it's countries, maybe it's experiencing new cultures, but it's really about exploring outside of yourself, traveling, visiting new places. And the issue that most explorers deal with is that they exoticize exploring so that it has to be, you know, in some foreign country in another continent. And I think to your question about how is it, you know, possible for everyone, they tend to miss the adventures that are closer to home, right? So I had an interviewee that they only had a couple of months to take off. It was during the summer. And their exploration was they would take one kid at a time on weekend trips. They'd never gotten kind of solo mommy-daughter, mommy-son trips. And so they were doing road trips visiting presidential libraries. And so these were, you know, within a six-hour drive, but gave their kids this like memory that they always talk about still, right? Around these like one-on-one times. Like, and so that's not walking 6 weeks in Japan, but it's like, you know, extremely important to those folks and fit within their life stage. And then the last archetype are the seeker. And so if the explorer is, you know, exploring outwards, the seeker is kind of exploring inwards. So who am I? Who was I? What parts of the joys and kind of passions that I had growing up have I kind of let simmer and not paid attention to? Is it art? Is it music? Is it spirituality? And then, so that's a little bit of archaeology, like who am I? What do I want? And then like looking forward in their life, who do I want to be? And so on the ideal sabbatical, you're healing, you're resting, you're experimenting, you're exploring, whether that's internal or external, and then you're synthesizing all of your learnings at the end so that you can try to decide, like, how do I want to re-enter the world? How do I want to operate going forward?
And that part, which I think is crucial, the synthesis, is that something that organically happens, or is there an intentionality around, okay, now I have to sit down and really process, whether in a journal or, you know, just in your head, how to take all the lessons from the past X number of months and be, you know, version 2.0 of yourself?
Yeah. You mentioned my only concrete recommendation in the book. So I try in the book to say, listen, like, here's some best practices, here's some frameworks to think about, but I really want people to experience their own sabbatical. But my only concrete recommendation is journaling. Even if you don't have a journaling practice, which, you know, I didn't really, you really want to capture how you're feeling, what your life is like before your sabbatical, ideally kind of cataloging all the experiences and feelings and learnings you're getting during, so that when you get to the end, and this is what I do when I advise folks, you're kind of comparing, like, here's the way you're talking about yourself and your life and your interests now. Here's how you were talking about it before. Otherwise, you kind of normalize your own transformation, right? It's like a frog in a pot. And so, like, truly by being able to see your written record of what was important to you, what was causing you stress, and then have those kind of things change over time can really help you synthesize. Another thing I recommend, obviously, is working with a coach or advisor, especially one that works with people who are going through transitions and taking leave. We have some up on my website at thesabbaticalproject.org. And the other technique is what I call kind of the ghost of past you. I need to figure out how to talk about this more clearly. But when you go back to your old life, if you can come back maybe a few days early and go back to work, go back to your routine life, but be kind of an active standby, like passive listener. So what does it feel like to be in the meetings that you're in? When you talk to people that were doing your work or your people at your job, does it feel good to be back in that space or does it not? So it's one thing to kind of conceptually think about whether and how you want to rejoin your old life. It's another to actually, like, tangibly and like in an embodied way feel, what is it like to return to my life? Do I want to choose this or do I want to do something else?
That's really cool. It's almost like, you know, you're auditing a class in a way, right? To see.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No charge on that one. Really quickly, so you go through best practices. Are there any things that you should tell people to not do on sabbaticals, other than we know they got to get their rest, right? They got to relax and recover. But any other things that are sabbatical no-nos, generally speaking?
The thing that typically gets people is not committing to the duration necessary. So I think I talk about, like, duration and disconnection as being essential components of a proper sabbatical. So how long are you off? And then while you are off, how connected are you to your past life? You know, are you still getting your work emails? Is your phone still a portal of distraction in that old identity? And so if you don't give enough time for the process to run, it's what's called identity foreclosure. So the chance of you kind of evolving and moving to an updated identity is foregone because you didn't give it enough time. You know, I give an example in the book of someone who they quit this job that they no longer believed in, and they had all these, you know, amazing ideas for what they wanted to do on sabbatical. It was like, go for a month and like really get good at skiing and take their mom on a week-long vacation and then take their dad on a week-long vacation and all of these things. And then, you know, a couple weeks in, they posted what they thought was a pretty, you know, normal message on LinkedIn saying, I've left my job, you know, like, thank you to those folks and looking forward to the next chapter. And unbeknownst to them, that just kind of opens the floodgate for people to say, like, oh my gosh, if I left my job, I would want someone to help me find a new job. And so people are, you know, pinging them saying, like, oh my gosh, like, what are you doing next? How can I help? Here, send me a resume. This person's hiring. And then, so the floodgates are opened, and then all they did was take one kind of informational call, and then they're in an interview process. And once they're in one interview process, they want to get into another one so they can have a negotiating position, and then it's gone, right? And so I think, like, telling people about what you're doing, I think, is fine afterwards. You can tell people you're going on a break. I'm not checking email until, you know, 3 months from now. I'll check in back then. But just don't let people kind of engage and intrude on your sabbatical. Give yourself that duration and the disconnection from routine life and routine work that is really hard to get. It's really easy to give away.
Well, that's good stuff. DJ, I've loved this conversation. And as you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests just this one question. And that is, what is your biggest helping, that single most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today?
I think when I think about the biggest helping, it is this concept of looking back at your life I think about sabbaticals as regret insurance. So try to give yourself some time, 30 minutes by yourself, no phone, no distractions, and just think, what is it that I would regret not doing in my life? You know, you have however many decades, however many years of work left. What is it that you would regret not doing in your life? And what can you do? What mountains do you need to move in order to make that a possibility? I think of the idea of a sabbatical as like a seed you plant. And what I hope from this conversation is that some people have listened to this episode and thought, you know what, I actually did really want to live in Spain with my family or what have you. And like now I'm actually starting to put the gears into motion. And it might take a few years, 5, 10 to blossom. But I think using that lens of what is it that I would regret not having done with my life and how can I actually put it into place would be my hope for your listeners.
Well said. The book is called Big Time Off, The Transformative Power of Sabbaticals and How to Take One. It's available everywhere tomorrow. But DJ, if people want to learn more about you and your sabbatical project, where can they go online to find that?
I am on LinkedIn, DJ Didana. I think I had no intention to become the sabbatical guy in my life, but I think if you Google sabbatical and DJ, you'll find me somehow.
Okay, you're the sabbatical guy. Well, we will have links to everything DJ Didana and sabbaticals and the book in the show notes at drrichardschuster.com. So if you're in the car, we'll get you covered. You can get all that good stuff. DJ, this has been a phenomenal conversation. I'm so grateful you came on the show today. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with all of us.
Thanks, Doc. Great to talk to you.
Likewise. And to each and every one of you as well, thank you. If you like what you heard today, if you're inspired, if you are going to start planning your sabbatical, even if it's 5 or 10 years away, awesome. Go give us a follow and a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post it in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.